you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Today on Quick Slants the Podcast, Houston Super Bowl edition. We get into all things Super Bowl and all the things around the Super Bowl and all kinds of things like that about Houston and Super Bowl 51. I mean, he's going to get after it.
Today on Quick Slants the Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We're on Radio Row here in Houston. Phil and I just talked for about 7 minutes. And Phil, just recently joining the ranks of parenthood last week with young Ryan Perry arriving on the scene, looked at me and said, shit, I forgot to hit record.
So we're gonna sleep deprivation is real, people. It is a real thing.
But you look at a guy like that, Phil Perry, I'm talking about in this instance.
I'm right here,
and you,
right in front
and
of
you. And you look at him, and you say to yourself, what am I going to do, roll my eyes? No, I'm not. I'm going to say, it's all right. Start it over again. You know why? Because I've been a parent, and now Phil is. And when somebody screws up and they feel badly, you don't make them feel worse. You just say, it's okay. Start over again. So Phil didn't feel that
it's great. It's all about moving forward, I think.
Yeah.
No time to look back, you know. No time to look too far ahead from where we are right now. Let's just focus on the here and now.
And let's get into it because there's so many topics. We could talk Falcons. We could talk Patriots. We can talk game. We can talk about Goodell. We can talk about things around the game. I want to hit on a story I did today, Thursday, which relates to the landscape of the Patriots quarterback position. It's going to be something we'll be talking about for a while. No one else has really spoken to Don Yee nor taken an appraisal of how this agent, who has both Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo and also Julian Edelman under his auspices, how he'll figure into the entire operation and how he deals with both sides. Now, Yee was not inclined to speak about this with me on the record except to say it's a privilege to represent both players. But Garoppolo, Brady, and Edelman all spoke about Don Yee, who's been in the business since 1991, has represented Brady since 2000, has represented Jimmy Garoppolo since he came into the league, has a very stoic, understated approach to doing the job. If you go to the website, Yee and Dubin, Steve Dubin is his partner, and he's also very involved, obviously, with Brady.
Sure.
It is, as you click in the drop-downs, Tom Brady doesn't appear anywhere on the homepage. Tom Brady doesn't appear anywhere as, hey, look at this, we represent him, nor does Jimmy Garoppolo. Brady is tucked in a drop-down under football, and he comes up just before Tyler Bray, right after Josh Boyce. Just a face that says Tom Brady.
Pretty unusual because, if you go to some of these other agencies' websites, right there at the very top, plastered, you know, faces like Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. A.J. Green, whoever it is, because they want to make the most of that. It's a big deal that they got that guy, and they want to promote that, but Yee and Dubin say, no, we're cool.
Yeah,
we're
it's
cool.
Illustrative of almost a boutique approach that they have where the player, the individual, is the most important. They're not trying to curry new business because they want to leapfrog off of the guys they have. They want to take care of these guys in the best way possible. And those are, every agent wants to do that, but I think it's interesting. It speaks to the way they do their business that's how they've done this. And when you look at Don Yee in this negotiation, or in this landscape is probably a more accurate way to put it. Jimmy Garoppolo, who, as Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer reported, is beginning to attract concrete interest from the Browns and the 49ers. Now, the Patriots have him signed through 2017. They're under no duress to make any kind of deal. They can either trade Garoppolo before the draft, get him someplace where they can get some compensation for him, and also put him in the best position to succeed because he'll have an entire offseason. Or they can wait until the urgency from some other team starts to hit peak height, which had happened in Minnesota last year when they lost Teddy Bridgewater and made a huge offer for Sam Bradford. I think that's a completely different circumstance. The Patriots aren't going to get the same compensation in April that they might in August. Now, that'll put Jimmy Garoppolo in a much worse position but he won't have any say over that if the Patriots decide to trade him. Next, Patriots could sit on him and after 2017 say goodbye, Jimmy, and good luck out there and get no compensation, or they could even franchise him. As you look at all this landscape, it's a waiting game. But for Yee, the way he has to manage a complex situation with both guys is any decision made with Brady that he has intimate knowledge of will impact his other client, Jimmy Garoppolo. You have the best quarterback in the NFL and the most promising quarterback in the NFL, both under your umbrella.
And it's fascinating because, and you did a good job of pointing this out in your story, it seems like the approach that Yee takes on a daily basis and the stoicism, it feels like, that he shows allows for his guys, his players, to manage those situations as well as humanly possible. It's all about what can we control, and you said it, the Garoppolo situation in particular. He may have, like you said, intimate knowledge of what's going on with Brady and how that will affect Garoppolo, but he can't control a whole lot in terms of what ends up happening to Garoppolo. I'm sure he would love for all of his clients to find great success wherever they are and be starters and make Pro Bowls. That hasn't been the case, obviously, with Garoppolo yet, and it could be down the line, but it's that waiting game, and how do you manage that it sounds like Yee has really positively impacted Garoppolo in particular.
Mike Felger made a really good observation last night when talking about this on Sports Tonight, and it was that, say the Cleveland Browns are interested in Jimmy Garoppolo and making a deal for him. If Jimmy Garoppolo still has 1 year left on his contract, he can say, great, go ahead, deal for me through Don Yee, but I'm not re-signing there. Now, that would, in turn, make the Browns have to figure out how they're going to proceed. That would be a very hard-line stance to take for a player who's not currently starting in the NFL.
Right.
And it would also impede the Patriots from working out a deal, I would guess. So there are things that Jimmy Garoppolo or Don Yee could say which could impact the trade landscape. Mm-hmm. But I just think it was worth exploring how this works and how Yee figures into it. He's been in this position. He's been in the NFL since 1991. He knows Bill Belichick very well. He's constructed and done deals with the Patriots. He understands the landscape. He's represented Brady since 2000, Edelman since 2008, and Garoppolo since, obviously, 2014. The way he came to represent Garoppolo, though, had nothing to do with Brady.
Representation
of Sean Payton, who also went to Eastern Illinois. When Garoppolo was entering the process, Payton recommended Yee. Yee got in touch with Garoppolo, looked at film and said, we'd like to represent you. Never spoke to Tom Brady, did Jimmy Garoppolo, during the process. And it just so happened that they ended up on the same team at the same position in the best organization in the sport.
And that Garoppolo idolized Brady in some ways and, you know, tried to model his game after him in some ways, too. So a perfect storm, if you will, for Garoppolo coming out. That was a fascinating story that Tom posted. It's on the website right now, so make sure you go check it out at csnne.com. Tom, what are we hitting next? It's been a big Brady week. You broke really the news of the week, and the reason I hesitate to characterize it is because it was news of a sensitive nature, obviously.
Yeah.
It was about his family. It was about his mom in particular, who has been dealing with an illness for 18 months. And we saw Brady react very emotionally to some questions about his family. First, his dad. You know, he was asked about his dad at opening night on Monday night. The next day, there were some follow-ups as to, you know, why you get so emotional when you talk about these things. And we didn't really know what some of the underlying issues were. But you shed some light on those in a very delicate way, I thought.
Yeah, it was hard.
And you had to, and I know it was hard. But, tell us about earlier this week and everything that that you did.
You know, this is something that a number of people, I think, have known that Mrs. Brady's been ill for a while. And it's something I knew about really since July. And it's informed a lot of, I think, his ability this year to compartmentalize and not scream at the Stars about injustices wrought by the league or Roger Goodell. And in a way, September was rewarding for him. Even though he was missing football, he had an opportunity to spend time with his family. This is such a personal situation that Mrs. Brady and Mr. Brady would be the ones to share the information mm-hmm. to an extent. And I don't think that Mrs. Brady wanted to be in the limelight, so to speak, for an illness. And they were loath to have her as a rallying point, nor to be seen as any kind of a, hey, go easy on Tommy, he's right. dealing with this. Right. Brady is a very stoic person, deals with it is what it is, and it's my cross to bear. I spoke to him last week and said, this is part of the story of your season. And he said, I'm not positive if I want to share that. It might be something for my parents to deal with. And, after he alluded to it, I did reach out to a family source and explained that because there was going to be such a ravenous appetite for what was going on, once Brady alluded to a family situation, I experienced it, with other reporters coming up, say, what's the matter? Who's sick?
Right.
What's the problem?
Right.
I said, this is going to turn into an awful big thing. If you just mention that Mrs. Brady's been dealing with health issues, it'll be out there, and then there won't be the same level of trying to find out what this nugget is.
Exactly.
So, in turn, I reached out first and was given clearance to go ahead and just report that there was a health issue. And I did that, but it's still, I can't help but feel a little bit like an ambulance chaser in that regard, even though, there was an understanding from the Bradys that I have heard back that it was handled fine. You don't want to be in a position where you're sharing something that people don't want out, and you have to call and say, look, this is going to get out anyway. Do you want
right.
to?
But I think that was the case.
Off at the pass?
And it makes total sense that you would feel that way. But I think that was the case. And I think that's probably why you got the clearance that you did, because the family understood that as well, that
right.
there were going to be questions asked. When the greatest quarterback in the history of the league is moved to tears on one of the biggest media nights of the year, it's going to cause a stir. And it's mm-hmm. going to, and he's continued to be asked questions about this even up through yesterday's availability period. That was Wednesday. So it will still be a story, but I think he handled it well. And if you read Tom's story online, he had some really good details. And we should say, if you haven't read it yet, it sounds like she's doing better.
Yeah, that's the biggest upshot of it is she's doing much better. Played golf recently with Mr. Brady and quick slants, thoughts and prayers to
exactly.
the Brady
Definitely.
Family and to Tom, known him for a long time and wishing nothing for the best in the most serene way that she pursues good health again. So how do we segue to Roger Goodell
from that? I think we're going to take a really quick break.
Oh, good idea.
We're on Radio Row. There's people swarming around. Tom is very famous and a very popular person. And so we got to let him say
Florio,
hi to some people.
Jill Florio, wife of Mike Florio, is just over
okay.
at my 9 o'clock, your 3 o'clock.
There you go. So we're going to say hi to some people, and we will be right back. All right, Tom. You know what we haven't done yet?
What?
We haven't reminded the people that this podcast is presented by Papa Gino's.
We'll let the people know.
With dough-made fresh daily in Walpole, Mass. From just 5 simple ingredients, nothing else tastes like Papa Gino's. It's the official pizza of the New England Patriots, as well as Quick Slants the Pod, as well as Quick Slants the television show, regardless of where those things occur. Great show this week.
Slants?
Yeah, great Slants. And I didn't even notice that Gerard wasn't in this time zone.
No, but he'll be there here by today. But, yeah, it was a tremendously informative program.
A lot of good content.
We had Bill Belichick one-on-one from Media Day. We
yep.
had Devin McCourty. It was highly entertaining.
Yep.
So it was a good show. I want everyone to watch that. Also, I want to mention, in terms of Papa Gino's, we have at least had one listener of the podcast, at Abdul, who seems to be a scientist after looking
at
his Twitter handle.
Big time Twitter guy. A lot of followers.
Yeah. So
good for him.
He said that we finally wore him down with the Papagino's ads, and he just got a pie, and he couldn't have been happier with it. So there you go, at Papagino's.
Be like Abdul. Go buy Papagino's. Go get yourself some pies. I believe we told the people for Super Bowl Sunday last week that they're going to need between 50 and 100 pies.
Mm-hmm.
Judging by just the pace of the week, been a lot of news, been a lot of things to consume.
People are starving.
In terms of new, yes, people are starving, and that's going to mean maybe you're going to need 125 to 150 pizzas for your Super Bowl party. So just keep that in mind. Tom,
Phil's
what do you
expert
want to
on this, too, by the way.
What do you want to hit next?
Well, that's a revenue stream that you're creating right there for Papagino's. Mm-hmm, and when we talk revenue streams, nobody is more inclined to create and maximize revenue streams than Roger Goodell
in
the
NFL. Transition.
We had him on Wednesday, at the pre-Super Bowl press conference. It lasted 40 minutes. There was no ducking of New England-related questions. There was no bowing, no quarter given by the scribes from New England who asked pointed questions. Can't walk away saying that we didn't have our voices heard as a media group, and nor could we say that Goodell ducked them, but for $240 million earned over 10 years, which is what he's got, I think that that's the least he could do. I don't want to spend a long time on this.
I don't either.
Because it's like,
but can we just talk about how low the bar is? Like, that has been the general takeaway. I had the same takeaway as you, which was, at least he fielded questions from New England reporters this time around. That was, that barely happened. Was it last year, 2 years ago? Both, mm-hmm. maybe. So at least that was the case. But still, the answers, I thought you did a good job.
What did he say? Kirk Cousins just walked by. How do you like me now?
That was one of them. Oh, that was, you were so unsure of yourself that it didn't come out with all the
no
piss
gusto.
And vinegar that it probably should have.
But one of the guys trailing him got a kick.
You like that.
How
that's
do you
the
like
more famous
me?
One.
Oh, yeah, that
that's
was
more famous
I had Ed Koch. That was the former mayor of New York. wait, what was Ed Koch? How am I doing? That was it, Ed Koch.
How am I doing?
How am I doing? Yeah.
How do you like me now? I think that's a country song.
How do you like me now?
Cousins said that, too. Cousins grabbed
Gruden. Scott McLuhan.
Or McLuhan, yes.
Yeah.
By the shirt and said, how do you like me now?
I don't know. I guess I like you a lot. Please stop yelling at me.
So good on Roger Goodell for taking questions. Not so good on Goodell for answering some of those questions the way he did. Tom, you fact-checked him mid-press conference, which a lot of people liked.
I don't think
that
big with him.
It didn't, but here's the thing. He responded in such a way that wasn't entirely accurate, and I think he thought he was painting himself in a pretty good light. He thought he was being pretty quick in his response to you. But can you just explain
sure.
that back and forth really quick before we move on? Because I think if you'd missed the press conference, this was one of its better moments.
Yeah, Roger has a tendency to frame things as he's giving factual information. He'll drop in a distorted fact, and in doing so, explaining the court's decision, he said that the courts upheld and validated what we found. And that's not accurate. The courts did not uphold the investigation, nor did they validate what the NFL did. It merely, and it says this directly in the decision overturning Brady's appeal, that we're ruling on not on any of the facts of the case, but merely on whether or not Roger Goodell was empowered to do what he did when he suspended Tom Brady. That's the only thing they ruled on. So I pointed that out, just saying, look, they didn't validate or uphold you. And he said, well, if you look at the courts and the judges, they said that there was compelling, if not overwhelming, evidence against Brady. And that was posed, that was an observation posed by Judge Denny Chin.
Yes, it was.
But it wasn't part of the decision. So no, while one judge can say that, that's not the court as a whole upholding or validating, because Judge Berman and Judge Katzman, of the four judges who opined on this, two of them disagreed with Goodell and two of them agreed that he had the ability to do that. There's a varied amount of how much these people agree with what was done. Certainly the first person to rule on it, Berman, you could cite him any number of times in the same vein that Goodell cited Denny Chin.
Right. Selective so. Memory on Goodell's part.
It's propaganda. It's dishonest. And that's why I mentioned it. And there was pushback from me to me about having done that. But to me, if this is very important in this day and age on a number of different things. This is just overdeflated footballs. Factual information given from people in a position of power has to be filtered through. And if you have a chance to go back at the person who made the point right there and right then to try and bring them around or illuminate exactly what point they're trying to make, then why not do it? So that's why I did it. Go ahead.
Sorry. Can we mention the Barstool moment in the press conference as well?
I saw the big cat downstairs.
You did? Okay.
I
see Barstool on the agenda here for the pod, and Barstool has been banned?
Barstool has dominated this
how
week.
How did you see the big cat?
The big cat and PFT commenter are on the sidewalk interviewing us because they're going to hashtag press on.
There you go.
Even though that they had their credentials pulled. They're also curious as to how this is going to impact their new hire, Pat McAfee, former NFL player as of last night, because he's gone on with Barstool. Not a ruse, I was told. This is not a game. He is definitely leaving the NFL to work for Barstool from his Indianapolis headquarters. And so when Pat McAfee tries to enter, will he be shunned?
How about going from being, I saw somebody tweet this last night, and I apologize for not citing that person's tweet, but going from being one of the best punters in the NFL and one of its most colorful personalities to being banned by the NFL and in what the matter of a two-minute press conference, quote-unquote press conference, that he held on Comedy Central on Barstool's show.
One aspect of that, too, is fascinating to me that McAfee joins Barstool, which is so solidly anti-cult, anti-Ursa, anti-anybody involved with Deflategate. Mm-hmm. So now Barstool has not only seen the ouster of Mike Kensel, the firing of Ryan Grigson. We've all seen that. But they've also taken the Colts punter from them. That is the extreme cuckolding.
That is a cuckolding, yes, to the nth degree, I would say. Good get by them. Good for Pat McAfee, right? Doing what he wants to do, leaving a significant amount of money on the table, but wants to make the world a happier place, he says. So good on him. Hopefully he's allowed on Radio Row because he's a tremendous interview, and we'd love to see him. Maybe if he walks by the podcast, we can grab him, throw him on
here. By the common man, for the common man. Phil, you've been working, God, I think since your wife was 3 months pregnant on a flotation story. Explain to people what in God's name
off
this is.
On.
Because Phil is awesome at finding out the quirky little things the Patriots players do to get their bodies ready for multiple car crash equivalent collisions on Sundays. And did a great nutrition story last year. He wrote about The Hill, which is also known as The Hill.
Mount Belichick,
thank you. That the players run up during preseason and training camp. And he also has gone in-depth on saltwater flotation beds.
Yeah, sounds weird. Sounds weird that I would spend a lot of time on this. You have to use the bathroom.
Adam's here. Adam, the point guard, is here.
Yeah.
I've had a ton of coffee today.
Okay.
And, also
yeah, you're
so
really...
Phil,
your
tell us about these flotation devices.
At a high rate of speed over
back
there on the other side of the table.
Hey, this is Drew Rosenhaus. Hey, Drew. Hey, you too, man. Good to see you. How's it going? All right.
That was fun.
For some reason, the rifle cannon.
He didn't. Yeah, that's Andy Dalton that Tom is now yelling at. Interesting that Drew Rosenhaus didn't stop and just tell us how Gronk was doing right there.
Right, when Tom asked very quietly.
By all means, let's talk about flotation
Yeah, Phil, I'm interested
devices.
In this. What's the story here?
Let's not spend a whole lot of time on it. Has nothing to do with airplanes. Has a lot to do with sleep, relaxation, the process of decompressing.
Okay.
Let's say that. So there may be people out there who have heard of flotation therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that locally in the New England area has not become as big as it has in other areas of the country, like, say, Houston, or more specifically, L.A. L.A. is big into this stuff.
Walk us through it.
You have a tank that is about 8 or 9 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them look like they take different shapes and sizes. Some look like almost a clamshell,
okay,
that kind of opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Some look like a metal coffin. No joke. They are big, boxy, ugly looking things. The principle for any of them is the same, though. You want to get into an area that is dark, that is soundproof in most cases, mm-hmm, and an area that is filled with a little bit less than a foot of water, that it has about 900 pounds of Epsom salt.
Okay.
Mixed
900 pounds?
900 pounds, sometimes more. What that does is, when you get in and you lie down, you float without trying. It's like the Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm.
The salt keeps you buoyant, and the combination of the floating, the darkness, the soundproof environment,
mm-hmm,
all makes you feel like you're basically floating through space, because the water is also heated to the same temperature as your body.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels as though you are weightless, and it helps allow your body to de-stress in a lot of ways, because even if you go home and you lie down on your bed at night, you still have muscles that are working to a certain extent, whether it's your shoulders or your back, or people that wake up with back pain because of a soft mattress or whatever know what I'm talking about. So anyway, a couple of years ago, these tanks made their way to Gillette Stadium. Patriots now have two. Tom Brady is a huge proponent of the tanks. Julian Edelman as well. Had a chance to talk Julian Edelman at Go Figure, right? Had a chance to talk to Julian Edelman at length about them. He uses them multiple times a week. Most guys who use them, Dante Hightower, for instance, use it about once a week, and it can range from being in there from 15 minutes to an hour. Some guys stay awake. Some guys actually listen to music. You can plug your iPod in, and you can listen to something. But the whole point is to decompress for even just a few minutes, let those muscles in your body relax. You do it in conjunction with things like massages or cupping or all this, you know, the sorts of thing, acupuncture, that we associate with athletes. But I just thought that this was an interesting way for players to get their bodies ready for the punishment that they take on a weekly basis. And it's a little strange. Again, you're basically inserting yourself into a metal coffin sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The clamshell variety of tank is one that's becoming more and more popular, and so that one's not quite as imposing when you do get in. But it's a strange thing for a lot of players. Some guys haven't. Malcolm Butler says, I'm not really interested in that. It's a little skeevy. It's a little weird. But supposedly the combination of your body relaxing the environment, if you fall asleep in those things, Julian Edelman said, you know, you can fall asleep in there for just a short amount of time and it feels like, you know, you were asleep for 8 hours. And for a guy like Edelman, who is very open about the fact that he takes a pounding, and specifically his head has taken a pounding over the course of his career, he likes the thought of being able to sleep not only in there, but the sleep you get when you get home, because you are so relaxed, is of a higher quality because you spent time in the tank earlier in the day. And he understands, you know, from what he understands, you know, your brain, your mind is helped by the amount of sleep that you get. And so for someone like him who's trying to remain at the top of his game, that's important to him. And so the tank is something he swears by. And so many players swear by it. Chris Hogan, Matthew Slater, there is a number of players in that locker room that that use tanks. Brady supposedly has one in his house. So important that they've actually found a way to work in their tank time in Houston, even though there are no tanks in the team hotel. So
they can't just fly the tanks down here. They
can't
go
just fly the tanks down. They're big. They're expensive. They're hard to move. And so there are a handful of spots actually in the city that are a relatively quick drive from the team hotel,
mm-hmm,
that have these devices. No one's told me exactly where they'll go, in which therapy center they'll use, because they don't want the place getting flooded with fans.
Right.
But it's something that they're doing, Adam, and I think it's an interesting, we'll have more on this on the website soon, if it's not up there already at the time you're listening to this podcast. The reason it's interesting to me this week in particular is because this week is all about trying to maintain your routine.
Right, and that must be something difficult to do. And imagine the team ops people, like how much they have to put into trying to make it a regular experience for the players.
It's really difficult because not only if you're big into the float tanks, not only is it tough to figure out, okay, where do you go and when and how does it fit with the schedule, but even the nutrition stuff. I mean, the team, the training staff, the nutrition people, they basically have to pack up as much as they can and bring it with them. They have to take their show on the road. Everything is set up for them really nicely at Gillette Stadium mm-hmm. so that guys can have their shakes whenever they need them, whatever supplements that they use on a daily basis. There is a very regular routine and a rhythm to what they do every week and what they're putting in their bodies, and that is all thrown into chaos this week specifically. Last week, not so much, but it gives you a chance to prepare for this week as you try to. You just want to be able to do everything that's worked for you all year.
Right.
Right? And right. So you don't want any of those things taken away from you. Not only are guys superstitious, but they really believe in this stuff, and they know it works. And so they need it when they get here. And it's not always easy, but they've found ways to do it. And so that's why I think the float tank thing is interesting. They're going off-site. They're going away from the team hotel just to make sure they can spend a few minutes in these tanks, whether they're sleeping or just relaxing, because they know it helps them perform at their best. And so with the biggest game of the year coming up, you can't let that stuff slide.
Definitely not.
You got to
keep
that
going. You need the tank.
You got to keep it going. Adam, you have been grinding like none other for the last couple weeks, and I'm glad you're here and Tom's not, because I want to get a sense from you as to just what the scene has been like here in Houston. I mean, we're on Radio Row. This is one of the crazier spots. I'm looking at a Mike Ditka imposter right now
yeah.
who has the Bears sweater on.
Da Bears.
With Da Bears with the stogie in hand, the shades on. Like, okay, why? I don't know. But that's the sort of weird-ass thing that you find
right.
on Radio Row. What have been your impressions of, you've seen, the team hotels, this area,
mm-hmm.
you've been all over the map. You've been shooting great videos for us, producing great hashtag content. So, what have been your takeaways of Houston thus far?
I thought opening night was pretty cool. I'd never been to media night before, but having it inside the Minute Maid Park,
mm-hmm.
I think it provided enough room for you to kind of move around at least comfortably, It gave you some space, but
It can be pretty crowded, pretty claustrophobic yeah. at media day.
I expected it to be littered with more people who were there just for joke reasons. Like, Kel Mitchell was there as the Ed from Good Burger. Like, that was funny.
From Keenan and Kel fame.
Right.
Dance 360 fame.
Exactly.
Love
exactly.
It.
And there were a few people there who were doing, kind of like one guy had these giant bucket hats that he had on, but there was nothing like totally absurd.
Mm-hmm.
So that was I actually appreciated that. We did a little dumb thing with Gary that maybe the people saw on the
that was dumb, TV. But I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
It was entertaining. Yeah.
I think the players, for the most part, they get a kick out of just doing something different.
Exactly.
It wasn't harmful. So
I think people would be amazed to find just how open players are to stuff like that, especially this week, because they know it's part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so freaking sick and tired of answering.
Well, you guys have to be tired of asking the same questions all week.
Well, you try to mix it up, and that's what actually was interesting about the float tank story. It was something a little bit different. It wasn't, okay, Chris Hogan, how do you attack this Falcon secondary? It was, those questions are worthy for sure, and we're actually going to talk some football, I promise, later in the podcast. But they just get beaten down with the non-answers to the football questions, that if you can give them something a little bit unique, it's almost like they snap out of a trance. And honest to God, it happened to me yesterday talking to Hightower about something. The football questions, the how do you defend the Falcons running backs, even the contract stuff, he's gotten that enough mm-hmm. lately that, he has his stock answers. As soon as you ask some of these guys something a little bit different, it's like, oh, I'm using a different part of my brain now almost. I like this. Let's get into this because I haven't heard it 1,000 times already. So when Gary goes through his vocal warm-ups with James Devlin,
right.
You know, that's a fun time for him. He's okay with that.
Yeah.
And I think the players, too, like I said, they get it. They understand what this week's about. They understand they're going to be faced with all kinds of craziness. And I think they enjoy it to a certain extent. The Radio Row thing has been interesting to me because I've covered the last two Super Bowls the Patriots have been mm-hmm. in, didn't spend a lot of time on Radio Row. Spent a little bit more time here this year.
Yeah, so what we have is, this is kind of our home base.
Yes.
It's the Pro Football Talk set during the day, and then it transforms into the CSN New England set at night. So we kind of treat this as our...
It's a party at night.
It's a party. So we kind of, this is a, you know, we kind of have to be around Radio.
That's
Row.
Where we are right now. Yeah. We're here right now. PFT Live is going on at this very moment. Mike Florio's talking to Takiyo Spikes, who looks very impassioned about something that he's discussing. We're not listening to that because we have headphones on.
Right.
But it's a funny place because you really do just run into, and Tom, you know, was just shouting at Andy Dalton and Drew Rosenhaus. And,
right.
Dan Marino just walked by. You know, those are the kinds of things that are weird about Radio Row. I bumped into Keyshawn Johnson earlier
yes,
this week
right.
on Radio Row.
That's right.
He made some headlines in Boston for saying essentially that Patriots receivers would have a hard time making 53-man rosters around the league because they're just not that talented. They fit the Patriots system, and they do what Brady likes. But are they really guys that would be doing what they're doing now elsewhere? And so I wanted to check in with him and say, hey, Key, you know, I didn't say that because we're not that tight.
Right.
But
right.
What'd you mean by that? Do you really feel like, you know, somebody like Julian Edelman would make a 53-man roster elsewhere when, you know, not every offense, but a lot of good offenses these days have pretty traditional slot receiver types, and, you know, therefore making Edelman a very valuable commodity, in my opinion. And so he went off a little bit. It was interesting. He doubled down. He basically, you know, for him, it's all about Brady. It's all about the system. The individual physical skill sets of these Patriots receivers do not impress him. He's not impressed by Chris Hogan's speed.
No.
He's not impressed by his ability to run through coverage. He's kind of impressed by Julian Edelman. He says he's the one guy who might have some success elsewhere. But Danny Amendola, he says, no, you know, get out of my face with that. Even Wes Welker, he went back to Wes Welker. He said, Wes Welker, come on, people said he was on track for a Hall of Fame career at one point, mm-hmm. which, if you want to look at the numbers, Keyshawn, I mean, the guy was like the most productive receiver in the league for 6 years.
Yeah.
Pretty good player. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll get that kind of respect. But you know, you have to give the guy his due to some extent. It's not all Tom Brady. At least I thought so. And I asked Keyshawn Johnson, and I said, so could I, you know, if that's how you feel, could I be an 80-catch guy in this Patriots offense right now? And then he said, one of the nicest things anybody's ever said to me. And he said, yeah. He said, yeah, I think if you gave me time, I could make you an 80-catch guy. So, you know, all of a sudden I've become a very big fan of Keyshawn Johnson. I understand Patriots fans may not be because he was a little bit derogatory towards the skill sets of the Patriots receivers. Although he loves Brady. Like, he's all about what little respect he has for the Patriots receivers, it sounds like. He has oodles and oodles of respect for Brady, Josh McDaniels, and Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I don't know. I think Patriots fans' anger is a little bit misplaced. I think Keyshawn Johnson's probably somebody who doesn't watch the Patriots a whole lot. I think, you know, you got to give these receivers a little bit more credit than he did. But that's the kind of thing that happens on Radio Row. You have a 7-minute conversation with Keyshawn Johnson, and he tells you, you know, you could be a borderline Pro Bowl player in the Patriots offense, which made me feel pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Here comes Tommy. He's walking back.
Oh, too bad. Just kidding. Let's take this moment as we transition to Tom being back, and let's just remind everybody once again that Papa Gino's is made with dough made fresh. Does that make sense? Is made with dough made fresh? Yeah, that's okay. Papa Gino's is made with dough made fresh daily in Walpole, Mass. From just 5 simple ingredients. We still don't know exactly what those ingredients are, but we're going to get back to you on that. They might be secret. Tom thinks
they're
secret. They are simple. That is for sure.
how to go.
What else
there,
is
Tom?
For sure is that nothing else tastes like Papagino's, the official pizza of the New England Patriots. Tom,
it's a jungle out there.
It is a jungle out
there.
I mean,
I'm just trying to go, and then there's all these people, and there's your Derek Brookses and your Max Starkses and your Brandon Marshalls.
Max Starks, good on you for recognizing
Dick Vermeil.
Him.
I had to look at his credential. your Papa John, he's over there flipping pizzas. Nate Long, who is the producer of Quick Slants, among other television programs, is here in his inimitable way.
Hey, Nate. You guys can't hear him, but he said, huh?
He said, actually, he said, whoa. what do you want to do?
We talked about float tanks. We talked about the general scene here in Houston.
This is great because now I can be surprised still when I read the story on float tanks.
Yes, you can. That's true.
I know
there's a lot. There'll be a lot of good stuff that we didn't get into. We just kind of skimmed the surface.
So to speak.
Yeah. I think I almost put Adam to sleep. I did notice that, you know, he was, I think a couple yawns in there that'll probably be audible on the podcast, but hopefully everybody out there is just real fired up to read that thing.
Well, here's the thing. If you folks have begun to nod off, we got something special to smash you upside the head with.
Woo!
News Go! You know how this works. We haven't done it in a few weeks. I say news to Phil, and then I tell him go, and he spends 40 seconds maximum on a news item.
He always gets so mad at me. You get
seconds.
So mad.
It's supposed to be up-tempo. So, with no further ado, Phil News Go.
Tom, Jimmy Garoppolo, we already talked about him, but he has been asked about the trade rumors. You've asked about him. Mary Kay Cabot, a Cleveland Plain Dealer, reported earlier this week that the Browns will be interested in trying to acquire Jimmy Garoppolo if they don't like the quarterbacks in the draft, which from early returns from draft experts, it sounds like there are a whole lot of people who aren't really impressed with the quarterback class. So, Jimmy Garoppolo's response has been, as you said, can't think about it right now. Can't think about it. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. Right now, it's all about the Falcons. One other quick note on Jimmy Garoppolo. Jacoby Brissett is actually the guy who has been the Matt Ryan impersonator this week in practice, meaning Garoppolo has been kind of mixing and matching with the reps for the Patriots offense, but it's been Brissett who's doing the impersonating this week for the Falcons offense, which he loves. He says, really fun offense.
40 seconds.
Really fun offense to practice in, Tom. He just gets to air the thing out. Loves it, Jacoby Brissett does.
This guy's at 120 seconds, folks. Don't think I'm
Tom,
not fact-checking him.
News go.
Get this. When they were drafted in 2011, a couple of tackles for the Patriots, Nate Solder and Marcus Cannon, loathed each other. Neither guy liked the other. And the reason I found this out is earlier this week I asked Solder about his relationship with Marcus Cannon because he had last week described Cannon as his best friend. And both players, in walking back and forth between them at a media access period, said that it was very rocky at the start, that we didn't really like each other, that it exhibited itself with a fair amount of trash talk between them, but now they've become very close. And, you know, Marcus Cannon battled lymphoma as he entered the NFL and had a lot to overcome. And it's been reported, and we've talked about the fact that Nate Solder and his wife have a son, Hudson, who as an infant toddler is battling his own health problems. And it's a very ringing situation for him to deal with, and it shows an awful lot of professionalism. And I asked Nate about whether or not Marcus had said anything to him relative to that, and Nate said Marcus was one of the first people to come and talk to me about it and said that it does get better. So these two guys have a very special relationship, and it's interesting to see how guys can form a bond on within a team. Phil, news go.
Definitely. Dante Hightower asked about Jamie Collins quite a bit this week. He talked about how Collins' departure from the team sucked midseason. Those two were very close. He makes no bones about the fact that he was disappointed to see his buddy leave. Jamie Collins, Tom, got paid recently, among the highest paid off the line linebackers in the league now. Dante Hightower, obviously an impending free agent, just had his first Pro Bowl season. Is now going to a Super Bowl. One would think the Patriots were able to win if he plays well. He is only increasing his value with each passing day. He spoke to the Providence Journal on Wednesday and said, I've been working to get into this position. Obviously, the Super Bowl comes first, but knowing what's going to come up down the road, that's something I've been working for 5 years, and I'm looking forward to it. Tom, really quick aside here, do you think Dante Hightower is going to do everything within his power to hit the market to make sure that he maximizes his value. It seems like from everything we hear from him, he's excited about free agency, and I wonder if, even if the Patriots approach him with a new deal, if he would even be open to it before hitting free agency.
I think he's going to the market.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the Patriots will support that decision on his part so that they have established with him what he should be paid. And they've done that in the past with Devin McCourty.
Exactly.
And they've done it with other players. They don't want to have a player who's got buyer's remorse if they re-sign here. So the Patriots will be in a position where it does, they do understand the landscape. They'll try and entice a player to maybe sign early and stay. But if that player has done what Dante Hightower has done and achieved a level of notoriety and value within the league, go find out what they'll pay you.
Exactly.
Come back. You know, if it's out of the ballpark for us, then we're going to shake your hand and tell you good luck.
Okay. Thank you for that aside. But I'm now going to say, Tom, news go.
Alan Branch on the injury report, participation report later this week. We'll find out how he progresses. But important player in this game, I would think, in terms of run stuffing against a very talented and multiple Atlanta offense. So Branch had an ankle injury, was added to the participation report.
Toe injury. Mm-hmm.
He was added to the participation report. We will watch that and monitor the situation. It's Takeo Spikes. He's got muscles on his muscles in his forehead.
Good for him, because he's been out of the league now for a little bit. Okay, you are just in awe. You are mouth agape.
You're a big, strong guy. He's got muscular cheekbones.
Okay. All right.
Now, how do you do cheekbones?
Starting
exercises
to get weird, and he is within earshot, so let's hope that he continues to move along so that Tom can refocus.
He's handsome.
On news go.
What do you got? News go, Phil.
Thank you. Nate Ebner, Tom, was wearing a red non-contact jersey at Wednesday's practice, dealing with a concussion that knocked him from the AFC Championship game. Why are we talking about a special teams player here, Tom? Why? Who cares? Well, he actually has had the best season of his five-year career this year. Got some all-pro recognition. Very important to what the Patriots do in the kicking game. Personal protector on the punt team. Their leading tackler as a special teamer. His availability bears watching. Although he was at all media availability sessions, he's going to be up on a riser, actually, Thursday. A lot of cameras, a lot of bright lights in his face. Practicing, but wearing the non-contact jersey. We'll see if he'll be able to play on Sunday. Tom, news go.
That's it for news go. We are news gone.
Okay.
I didn't have anything else.
That's fine. We can stop it right
there.
That's
a UFC fight in
That's
person.
Not awkward. See, this is, yep, sure is.
She could kill me.
Oh, she's got the belt and everything. We should have tried to stop her. Get
yeah,
you in a
good idea.
Rear naked choke.
Jump out and get say, hey, hand up. Friggin' armbar me to the ground.
All right, Tom, let's talk. Can we talk a little bit about this football game?
Yep.
I think that's the only thing we've got left to touch.
Phil, let's hit on two things relative to the Falcons' offense. Excuse me, defense first. Marcus Cannon will be matching up with Sackmeister Vic Beasley.
How that's such will a they geeky be? Term, isn't it?
I Sack
used
Meister.
It. I, not Meister. I used Sackmaster
yeah.
in a story, and I felt terrible about it. But
yeah.
there's only so many times you can say edge
have
defender
you
or pass rusher.
Have you written narrative this year?
No. No.
Don't
I've
use
stayed
the word
away from
narrative.
That. Okay, geez. I mean, you don't have to
effort
all patronizing
to,
like
effort
that.
Effort to stay away from the word narrative.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You like saying effort?
Okay.
Kevin Miller says effort.
Efforting?
Yeah, I'm efforting that.
Efforting, we'll efforting dot, dot, dot.
We'll be efforting to get D's on our credentials so that we can get into the domestic compound. And then Kevin looked at my credential the other day. He said, you don't have a D!
And no D to be found. I don't yeah. have a D either.
No.
And D-less.
Yep. And Kevin's runs the station in many fashions.
And he's so. Now sitting right next to us.
Yep.
And hopefully enjoying this portion of the podcast. Tom, Marcus Cannon, you're right. We'll be up against Vic Beasley for a very good chunk of this game, one would think. Vic Beasley, for those who have watched the Falcons throughout the course of the season, would know, is almost exclusively a left-edge rusher. Long gone, Tom, are the days where a team's best pass rusher lines up on the blind side and exclusively on the blind side. You find these guys all over the defensive line. You find them in the middle. You find them on the left edge, right edge. Marcus Cannon, although he's going up against the NFL sack leader in Vic Beasley, I think has a very good chance to slow that guy down because he's seen a lot of very good pass rushers on that side this year. Von Miller, Cameron Wake, Jerry Hughes of the Buffalo Bills, all primarily left edge rushers, and Cannon handled them all. Hasn't given up a sack since week one. We know he's a second team all pro. We've talked about his development this year, but that's a key matchup to watch, because I think if the Falcons defense has any prayer of stopping this Patriots offense, it's going to be because Vic Beasley gets to Tom Brady and makes him uncomfortable.
Vic Beasley's dimensions, Phil, is he...
Speed. He's a speed guy.
He's a speed, smaller guy.
He is more...
A little smaller than Miller, correct?
I would say he's more Miller than...
DeMarcus Ware.
Right. Yes, exactly. Cameron Wake, even, or kid from Houston, Jadeveon Clowney. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a freak, but... You know, smaller, faster dude who's going to try to bend around you. He's just going to try to outrun you off the snap and just beat you with quickness, beat you with his explosion. And Cannon, to his credit, huge guy. But with the weight he's lost, the athleticism it seems like he's picked up over the course of this past offseason, has been able to handle those types of players. And so I think the Patriots should feel good about that matchup going into this one. What else you got on this game, Tom?
Well, I think that the marquee matchup for the Patriots defensively against the offense of the Atlanta Falcons is obviously going to circle around Julio Jones. And the indications that I've gotten in covering the team is that Julio Jones could be checked by Eric Rowe with Devin McCourty over the top. So if we look at this, that would put Mohamed Sanu in a matchup with his college teammate Logan Ryan. Two guys very physical, very familiar with each other. And then that would put the other corners in a position where they are being covered by Malcolm Butler and taken away. So two to take away Jones, Ryan and Sanu to do battle, then Butler erasing someone on the outside. And when we say this...
Taylor Gabriel would be the guy, a little bit smaller, a little shiftier, better matchup for Butler.
Ty Hilton, Emmanuel Sanders type.
Yes.
In saying this... People have to understand, too, that it's not going to be, okay, everybody, go get the guy you're supposed to cover. The Atlanta Falcons will try to get the favorable matchups that they see. They're going to try and move Devin McCourty away from the area after the snap from Julio Jones, if that's the case. But I'm expecting a 7- and 8-man drop for the Patriots throughout this game. 4-man, 3-man rush.
I think it could be... A big Devin Daron Harmon game. It could be if they want to play those split safety coverages where Devin McCourty's not the only safety on the back end. You know, you cover yourself a little bit better if you're the Patriots in that regard. If you're able to run Daron Harmon out there and have him take half the field, I'm interested to see, Tom, what the Patriots do, because the Falcons are so variable in their offense. They're not always in three receiver looks. So you won't see Butler, Rowe, and Ryan out there at the same time all the time. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see it a lot. But in the situations where they go two receivers and they like to use their tight ends, they use a fullback. You know, one of the few offenses that uses a fullback relatively extensively like the Patriots do. You'll see, I think, what we've seen in the past, which is have Logan Ryan take the bigger guy. You know, we've seen Logan Ryan on Demaryius Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, those types. I think in two receiver sets, they'll trust Logan Ryan to get on Julio Jones, and they'll try to figure everything else out after that. That could mean Butler on Sanu, with Sanu lining up out wide on the opposite side. So a lot of interesting matchups there. I think some concern about the Falcons running backs and their ability to exploit Patriots linebackers or safeties, whoever happens to be covering those guys. Any thoughts on that?
Got to take great angles, and that's something that Bill Belichick mentioned last week when we were back in Foxborough. The ability of these players, do they catch the ball, you do your algorithms and calculus and geometry, and you get there, and he is further along than you thought, and now you're grabbing at his ass and or shirt tail as he goes by, as opposed to being in a position to use your leverage and make a play. So the Patriots have been outstanding, by and large, as tacklers this year. They led the NFL in yards after catch allowed. It's going to have to continue in this game, and there's a lot of different players. That's what Atlanta does that other teams don't, on a couple of different fronts. But one of them is they have so many downfield threats that they will challenge you horizontally on the offense. So in challenging you horizontally, there's more players to cover from sideline to sideline in a smaller area. Mm-hmm. So if you just do the geometry on that, that vertical area, the catch and run ability is higher. If you have a vertical offense, it's probably not going to be a whole bunch of guys running vertical pass routes, but it's the ability to spread you out, hit somebody, and then get catch and run yards that the New England Patriots obviously have profited from and continue to profit from, that Atlanta can give them a little bit of a taste of their own medicine. Huge advantage, I think, that New England practices against its skill position players. Don't you think, Phil?
I do, especially for...
Even though they don't have a Julio Jones.
Right, and it's really hard to replicate that. What the Patriots have tried to do this week in practice is use a bunch of different receivers to replicate Jones, depending on the situation. So you've had Jacoby Brissett playing, Matt Ryan throwing to all sorts of different guys, having them run similar routes to what they'll see from the Falcons. You're going to see a lot of, and we talked about this on Quick Slants, a lot of the same things. If people out there remember Mike Shanahan's offense, and you should if you've been watching football the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, a lot of stretch runs. You know, they like to use that athleticism they have on the offensive line, get opposing defenses going one way, and then they'll bootleg with Ryan, who's pretty athletic, and go the opposite direction. A lot of play action. And so with the Patriots as focused on tackling as they are, Tom, especially those running backs who, once they get to the second level, very fast, run with really good vision. If you start to suck up, if you're Devin McCourty or Patrick Chung or Malcolm Butler or any of these guys in the defensive backfield, you start to suck up on those play action fakes, you're going to be in trouble on the back end. So I think they're still going to score. Good offense. It's a good Patriots defense has been great. They have not gotten enough credit. I think the AFC Championship game was validation big time for them, even though they don't think of it that way. So, Tom, when we talk about predictions, what are we thinking? What's your take? Give me your prediction. I don't know if you've given one yet. I don't believe you've written one. So This could be an exclusive.
Yeah, Chris Lance from the podcast exclusive. If you look at the ability of the Patriots to be successful in the red zone, turn teams away throughout the season, and really the lack of a tight end threat for the Atlanta Falcons, I think it's a big help. I mean, Julio Jones is as outstanding as he is. He's a 6-touchdown guy this year. He's not the red zone target that you would think. He's a downfield target. I think the Patriots' ability to turn people away in the red zone will carry over into this game. I think Atlanta's going to lose this game and come off saying, they never stopped us. We just didn't finish drives. The final score is 37-23. New England.
We're on the same page there. I gave my, a little prediction earlier today. So I'm going 34-24. I'm with you. And we talked about some of the numbers last week. You know, not only the Falcons' inability to defend in the red zone, the worst team in the league when it comes to touchdown percentage within the 20, but offensively, for as good as they are, they're good in the red zone. They're not great in the red zone. The Patriots are better. The Falcons, I believe, are 10th in terms of touchdown scoring percentage. So that's what the Patriots try to do. They'll let them get their yards. They'll try to keep big plays off the board, and they'll say, go execute from the 15-yard line and in, and we'll hold you to field goals, and we'll be perfectly happy with that. So I've got 34-24. Patriots obviously covering, and it's going to be one of the few Patriots Super Bowls that doesn't come down to the last possession or the last drive. Will people like that? Will there be a little bit of a lull after this game, because it won't? It's impossible to live up to the one from 2 years ago.
Super Bowl ever played. Every single Super Bowl the Patriots have been in has been dramatic in one way or the other. Every single one has featured in the last minute, except for the Eagles one, a level of drama that was enough to make your fingers drip on the floor with sweat. This seems like as good a time as any to put a period on the end of this podcast.
Yeah, Adam, let's just remind people.
I got some hot news.
Wait a minute. Adam left for like 20 minutes, and he comes back and he sneaks a microphone, and he's just like...
I get some hot news out of the Lady Gaga press conference.
What happened to Gaga?
She's not going to reveal her pick until she's going to write it on a piece of paper and hold it up at the end of her performance, who she thinks is going to win. So that's her prediction.
Seems like there are... more efficient ways to get that information out there.
You know what?
But also,
it's hard
to
tell if
she probably has access to the Jumbotron.
Yeah. Because she has such a great poker face. Okay, folks.
Just be sure to watch all of our pregame and postgame coverage. We got monster shows.
You're only saying that because Kevin Miller's
up.
Right here.
He is right here, and that did remind me because he told me to plug it last night, and so I'm going to plug it right here. Why the hell wouldn't we? 3-hour pregame, about a 37-hour postgame.
Uh-huh.
It goes into Monday morning. So just before the game, you're locked on Comcast. As soon as the game's over, you're back to Comcast, and you're locked on, and you're keeping your eyes peeled open with your index finger and your thumb just to make sure you can consume everything we're throwing at you.
Toothpicks also work fine.
Toothpicks work fine as well. Staples if need be. Okay, thanks. That'll do it. We will pod after the Super Bowl. Tom, it'll be fun. We'll be back in Burlington, and we'll be hitting the people then.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from CSNNE.com. If you liked it, if you hated it, let us know by leaving a rating or review. We could even read it during an upcoming episode. Subscribe to CSNNE podcasts like The Expats Podcast with Mike Giardi, Dan Copen, and Gerard Mayo, Quick Slants the Podcast with Tom E. Curran and Phil Perry, or Celtics Talk with Kyle Draper and A. Sherrod Blakely by using podcasting services like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Audio Boom.